Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the night of January 16th, in the thick of Israel's attack on Gaza, Israeli Channel 10 TV news anchor Shlomi Eldar took a call live on air from a friend in Gaza. Dr. Izzeldin Ablaish, a Palestinian obstetrician admired for his work with Palestinians and Israelis and for his long-time devotion to peace. Eldar held a cell phone to his lapel microphone as Dr. Ablaish, sobbing, begged for an ambulance. An Israeli tank shell had just hit his home. "Oh God, oh my God," he sobbed, "my daughters have been killed. Three daughters and a niece. This hour, On Point, the Palestinian doctor who lost his children to the war and still talks peace. You can join the conversation. Do you remember the news report back then of Dr. Ablaish and his family's tragedy? Could you keep reaching out for peace? Joining me now in the studio is Dr. Izzeldin Ablaish. He's visiting the United States, campaigning still for Mideast peace. Dr. Ablaish, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Let's listen back for just a second, if you would, with us, just to remember what it was like in those days, started in December into January as Israel's invasion of Gaza raged in response to rocket attacks from Hamas that had gone on for some time. Here's an excerpt from that time from NPR's Eric Westervelt.
Overnight and today, Israeli tanks and infantry forces fought their way into Tel Ahawa, a neighborhood in the southwest corner of Gaza City. Across much of Gaza City today, the sound of machine guns, airstrikes, and drones again can be heard. This morning, witnesses say large groups of civilians in the south of the city and in other parts are now fleeing their homes as Israeli ground troops backed by attack helicopters move deeper into crowded residential areas.
Before that was over, terrible losses. Losses in particular to the family of my guest today, Dr. Izzeldin Ablaish. Doctor, thank you for being with us. Can you describe where you were during that time when Israel moved on Gaza? Where were you? Where was your family? What were you doing?
Really, I was 25th of December. I returned from my work as a senior researcher at Gertner Institute in Sheba Medical Center in Tel Aviv.
That is, in Israel. You've worked a lot in Israel
yes.
with Israeli patients, doctors, medical.
I returned late afternoon. It was 25th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the invasion, the operation, the war, whatever the names, I don't mind.
Operation Cast Lead.
Whatever the names, it's not important.
Mm-hmm.
The results are the most important. It started 27th. So the borders were blocked and I stayed at home with my 8 children that I have.
Your wife had died a couple of months before. I'm sorry for that.
This is maybe...
From an extended illness.
Yes. This is the... I don't know if it is incidental or intentional, but I believe, as a believer, something behind that, that my wife passed away 16th of September 2008, mm-hmm. 4:45 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughters and niece were killed 16th of January 2009, 4:45.
The Israeli Defense Forces have said since that terrible day that, yes, indeed, it was an Israeli tank shell that hit your house. There was fighting going on all over the place. What happened?
During the 2 weeks of what is called the ground operation, I stayed at home with my children. 7 of them, one of the daughters, were at her aunt's house. But I felt I am happy to be with my children, to spend time with them. In spite, we haven't electricity, we haven't water, we haven't the vital needs, but we have the love and the care and to be together with my children who were building their dreams, their hopes, what they want to be, and what are their plans. Till 14th of January, when a tank approached my house, just 10 meters from the main gate, I felt the death in front of us. What am I going to do for that tank, which is pointing the cannons to the house?
Had you been warned to get out of there?
First of all, no one contacted us, and also where to go. If anyone, and I want him to be honest with himself, to tell me about any safe place in Gaza that I can go to, and also why to leave my house. I am not a military man. Even sometimes when they started to say there were snipers at my house. My daughters were expert snipers. They are focused and they know what they want, to be educated and to achieve their goals. My daughters were armed with love, hope, and action for understanding of other people.
They went
to New Mexico to meet with Jewish, Christian, Muslims, Druze girls.
Peace camp.
In peace camp. This is the arm, and this is what weapon they have.
You had worked in Israel a lot in your medical career as a fertility expert, obstetrician. You treat Palestinians in Gaza, Israelis in Israel. You've managed to take Palestinians out of Gaza into Israel for a long time now. So it's not as though you were a stranger to Israel. You're fluent in Hebrew. You knew that the country, the culture, the people.
And that's why they knew me well. I spent most of my time in Israel more than in Gaza. At Soroka University Hospital, even at Sheba Medical Center, they were my homes. And to spend it with all of my heart, willing to make a difference for more understanding and to be exposed to the other side. And the message, to transmit the message between both sides, that both are equal and similar.
Your daughter Aya was 13. Daughter Mayar was 15. Daughter Bisan, 20. Your niece Nur, who was also there, 17. What happened on that day?
Nur, she wasn't at our house at that time. Just 3 days before, she was in one of the public places in the camp.
Your niece. Mm-hmm.
And then sudden, 3 days before, she is knocking the door and coming. I was shocked. Who is knocking? I thought that the IDF is the ones who are knocking.
Mm-hmm.
She is Nur, carrying a white flag.
To your house, to your home.
To my home. And she said, I want to die here. I don't want to be in the public places. We are intimidated. Mm-hmm. 40 or 60 people in one room, without water, without any vital needs. And when she came, in spite of the suffering we have, she said, you are in paradise.
In your house.
In my house. Without gas, without electricity, without water, without any vital needs. But we have, as I said, the love and the care and to be together with my children. And on Friday, my daughters were building their dreams. Because I have two offers, to go to Toronto University or Haifa University.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to discuss it with my children.
To work in Israel or to work in Canada.
These
were right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. And Aya, that you mentioned, she said,
13.
I want to fly. I said, okay, we can go to Canada. Bisan was willing to continue to get her MA, master degree.
Mm-hmm.
Mayar, I was proud and happy that she will follow the path of her father to be a doctor. And at that time, 4:30, I had to be phoned by Channel 10 for an interview related to women's health. Just seconds.
Channel 10 is a big Israeli television station.
Seconds after I left the room of my daughters who were sitting together.
This was an upstairs bedroom?
The second floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a five-floor building.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my brothers living in that building.
Mm-hmm.
It's our own.
Mm-hmm.
And the only building with that design in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It's well known.
Mm-hmm.
The first shell is coming.
Tank shell.
Tank shell. At that time, I felt slaved, out of space. I don't know what is going on. To go inside that room to find bodies, Mayar, who dreamed to be a doctor, Nur, their bodies are disconnected from their heads. Their brain on the ceiling, drowning in a pool of blood. I saw Oshada. Her eye is coming out. Her fingers are torn. I started to scream. These daughters who were still alive, the second child is coming. My niece came down from the third floor when they heard the first shell, and my brothers. The second shell killed Bisan, my eldest daughter, injured Gaida, my niece, and two brothers.
And very shortly, you were on the air to all of Israel describing this through Channel 10.
And that's what, as a believer, I say it, why I am tested. And my daughters were tested and selected for this tragedy. And to be at that time live on Israeli TV Channel 10. I think there is a lesson and a wisdom behind that. And as I said, as a believer, nothing for bad, but for good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today with the Palestinian doctor who lost three daughters in the Israeli invasion of Gaza and still wants to talk peace. I'm joined by Dr. Izzeldin Abdel-Esh. He lost his three daughters and a niece on January 16th this year. On that night, January 16th, the doctor had called his friend Shlomi Eldar, anchor reporter for Israel's TV Channel 10. Eldar was live on the air. He put his cell phone to his clip-on microphone so that viewers could hear Dr. Abdel-Esh begging him to send ambulances to his home. They're communicating here in Hebrew, with which Dr. Abdel-Esh speaks fluently, of course, but the message is clear in his sobs on that day and the cries of his remaining children in the background. Dr. Abdel-Esh, I'm sorry to play that again, the most terrible day of your life, but it's really the only way to convey what so much of Israel heard on that day and in the days that followed, that opened up a kind of view inside this conflict that many had never quite had before. And if I may, here's you the next day speaking to Western reporters, describing his daughters, their friendship with Israeli girls, his loss.
Bisan, the eldest daughter that I invested, she was the closest one to me. Don't imagine to go without Bisan. Bisan, she was the most lovely girl. For her Israeli friends, always they were calling her, how do you feel? Are you safe, Bisan? This is the good voice of the Jewish who are living in Israel. They were calling. They know my daughters. I saw her body. Parts of there, I go to see my daughter, Mayar. To see just the body and the head is thrown. My other lovely Aya, who was dreaming just on the same day.
My daughter, who was dreaming just that same day. I wish you could explain to us, from that depth of pain, from that kind of tragedy, and, you know, I have to say again, our sorrow at this loss, so many losses, and this loss in your family. Please describe to us how you've come from that back to your position of working for peace, of reaching out for reconciliation. I have to say, in all honesty, I've watched your. I don't know if I could do it. How have you done it? What's your motivation? How do you come back to that extended hand?
You know, the motivation comes from the deep faith that I have, and as a believer, as I said. Why Izzeldin was tested and his daughters were selected. Bisan, Mayar, and Aya. There is lessons. God planned something. Something for positive. The second day, it was announced to have ceasefire.
After these deaths.
After these deaths. Mm-hmm. So it's satisfying for me to save lives. And as a medical doctor who used to work to save lives. The second thing, it opened the eyes and the hearts and the minds of the Israeli public at the size of the tragedy the Gazans were facing. This entered their houses, their homes, their kitchens, everywhere. And it opened their minds and their hearts. Number three, what I found from this tragedy, how human are we, all of us, that Israelis and Palestinians, we are similar. The Sheba Medical Center, Tel HaShomer, they want to establish an auditorium and international telemedicine conference there in memory of these three daughters.
In Israel.
In Israel. Another thing, because they were daughters, as I said, full of dreams and hope and working for understanding and knowing others. I am in the process and found all of the support to establish a foundation, an international foundation for girls and women, to empower girls and women in high education and health. And that's what do we need. Healthy and educated mothers and girls. It's time for mothers and girls to be involved in decision-making and to be part of our life. At least mothers and girls, if they don't achieve peace that you are speaking about, that I don't believe in it in this world, they can't bring war, or they will never bring war. And educate a mother, you educate a nation. Educate a woman, you educate a nation. And that's what do we need. You speak about peace.
Well, I think you do.
Yes, and you mentioned it. As a medical doctor who used to work and to practice to save lives, and within the borders of the hospital, all are equal and similar, with all of our hearts and the skills, willing the best for our patients. Peace, this word, which has been used for many years, and even we repeated, without knowing what is the meaning of that. And as much as many people, many leaders, are involved in bringing peace, peace is fading and far away. Have we changed course and being initiate, creative in something else? We need to listen to each other, to understand each other, to respect each other, and that the dignity of Palestinians and Israelis are equal. This is what do we want, and this is what is practiced within the hospitals. And doctors, what are they practicing? And that's what do we need, and our leaders should start from there, to be honest with each other, to be serious. It is not just to talk and will for what we say peace. Willingness is not enough. We must act. It's time for actions and to translate these words into actions.
But let me ask you, I want to ask about Israelis and about Palestinians here. I'm reading an Israeli essayist who said, never before had a Palestinian, you, received such empathetic coverage by the mainstream media in Israel. His was the figure of a modern-day Job, a pacifist, a doctor who speaks Hebrew, a human being who continues to speak the language of peace even after his daughters were killed. You'd like to see the kind of the Hippocratic Oath values of the medical world taken to the whole world. But from your story, I'll ask you about both, but first Israelis, what do you hope Israelis learn? Many people died in this conflict. From the story of your family's tragedy, what do you hope Israelis take away, learn, see?
I think from this story and this tragedy and the outcome of this tragedy, that the hope is still there.
Because you're still
symbolize
extending
the tragedies,
your hand? But the loss is terrible.
It's, you know, I lost my daughters, most precious daughters, that each of them was a special world. All of my daughters, they never succeeded in schools less than 97%. But they are lost. I can't return them.
You've seen elections since this attack, since the invasion of Gaza, Israeli elections since then, a new government that appears to be less sympathetic to peace process.
You know,
what does that mean?
What do you think of an election after a war like this? What will be the product of it. But even whatever the governments are, these are not permanent. It's temporary. And they were not written to lead us and to control us forever. This is temporarily, and I think the nation in both sides are the permanent. The Israeli people and the Palestinian people are the permanent.
In Gaza, Hamas was elected. What do you want Palestinians, what do you hope Palestinians will learn from your family's story, from this tragedy?
You know, for me as a Palestinian, I'm speaking about a human being and dealing with the human life. Without Palestinian and Israeli, there is a Palestinian people and an Israeli people. I don't speak about Hamas or Israel Beiteinu or that. There is a bigger nation there. Those people that you are speaking, whether Hamas or Lieberman or that, they are part, but as I said, they are not permanent. And they will not stay, nothing permanent. The people will stay there, the Palestinians and the Israelis.
Doctor, we have a lot of listeners who would like to speak with you. If I may, I'd like to turn to a couple here. From Providence, Rhode Island, Sumner is calling. Sumner, you're on the air with Dr. Izzeldin Abul-Aish.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Okay. Doctor, I would like to tell you I'm a 62-year-old American Jew who supports the right of Israel to exist and also supports the rights of Palestinians to live with dignity in their own state in peace with Israel. I want to tell you that I heard the original story on the BBC, and I cried then, and I have cried since every time I've heard the story. I express my great condolences to you and my tremendous admiration for you. I think that truly, as you implied before, that you are an instrument of God, because of the fact that the whole incident was recorded and is now being told to the world. And I wish you tremendous success. And if you are able to achieve success, that will be success for both the Israeli and the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. So, inshallah, you will achieve your goals. And thank you for being the human being that you are. And that's all I really have to say.
Sumner, thank you very much for that. And Doctor, let me get one more call. Here, Suresh calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Suresh, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I had a two-part question, Tom. Firstly, what I wanted to understand is the good doctor would be well within his right to seek retribution. What's inspiring him to do the opposite? Because I think that's a great example he's setting for the rest of the world. And secondly, what can we do to help spread his message?
Suresh?
I'll take the answer off the air.
Thank you, Suresh. Doctor, there from Sumner and Suresh, two observations and questions.
Thank you so much. And I think what can we do to open our eyes? And that's what I'm trying. Palestinians and Israelis, even when I say we, I speak and say about Palestinians and Israelis. We were created with two eyes, two ears, and our mind to use them and not to close one eye and to see by the other. For Palestinians and Israelis, they had to open both eyes on the situation and to change course. No one can deny the other's right. What can you do? And all of us, we had to speak loudly, as I mentioned before, and also as I heard from the first speaker, that the dignity of the Palestinians and the Israelis are equal. We had to fight for a humanity that brings both of us together. We are similar more than different. And we had to live equally. That's what I say. We don't want to say in peace, equally, respectfully, in collaboration and partnership. This is the right way, and how all of us come together and to speak loudly. This is a moral responsibility that each of us should carry this message and learn from the tragedy. I don't want to treat the tragedies, but to prevent more tragedies.
Suresh asks about your motivation. You refer to your faith as religious faith as giving you this motivation. But people also reach to religious faith for the opposite, to sustain antagonism to sustain claims that lead to bloodshed.
You know, I started to think of that. I lost the three beloved daughters, but I have more five who have the future. And also as a medical doctor that I am practiced, we are dealing with patients who are alive, not with dead patients. Once the patient is dead, it's enough. We can't do anything. So I think for the Palestinian-Israeli case, the patient is still alive, but he is in the intensive care unit. And how can we get him out of that situation? And there is hope. What happened with this tragedy, which brought Palestinians and Israelis together, after this tragedy, to open their eyes, it may be for our leaders to be aligned behind one goal for the Palestinian and Israeli people.
Dr. Abba Aish, please stand by for a moment. I want to bring a voice in from Israel to better understand the response to this story, this tragedy that's unfolded there. From Tel Aviv, we're joined by Gadi Taub. He's a writer, essayist, historian, writes a regular op-ed column in Israel's largest daily newspaper, Yediot Ahronot. He's described as a Zionist and a leftist. His writings have drawn fire from both the left and the right. He's author of several books, most recently Allenby. Gadi Taub, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
What's your sense of how Israelis received, taken on board, the story of Dr. Izzeldin Abulaish and his family?
Well, first, I want to express my deep admiration for this noble stance that Dr. Abulaish has taken. And I think that I'm speaking for many Israelis in that. The reverberations of this story were felt all over Israel. It was headline news everywhere. And I think that everyone realized that this is an amazing fiat of human will and nobility. I don't think that this is what changed Israeli public opinion in general. I think most Israelis just wish that we had more people like Dr. Abulaish on both sides who are willing to turn their backs on so many years of hatred and reach out for coexistence.
Meaning that despite the pain, the tragedy here, is it seen as a personal story? Is it seen as a something that might influence policy, the reality from Israel's side?
Well, you know, Israelis see first and foremost the large picture in which we are immersed. And I think that they think of Hamas before they think of Dr. Abulaish. We wish Dr. Abulaish would be the one to take the decisions for his people. But Hamas, which Israel looks at constantly, has an explicitly genocidal ideology. So we read the Hamas Charter, and it calls for the murder of every Jew as a Jew, not just Israelis.
Gadi Taub, please stand by in Tel Aviv. Dr. Izzeldin Abulaish with me here in the studio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with the Palestinian doctor, Izzeldin Abulaish, who lost three daughters in the Israeli invasion of Gaza and still wants to talk peace. We're also joined in this hour from Tel Aviv, Israel, by Gadi Taub, writer, essayist, and historian there. Let's go to Peter in Waltham, Massachusetts. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Abulaish. I'll try to make my point very very clear and short. First of all, Doctor, I appreciate your stance. I'm Palestinian, and I'm all for a peaceful resolution, and I admire what you do and what you're doing here today. My question goes back to an interview I saw after the ambulance had eventually taken his daughter to an Israeli hospital with which he was interviewing with Israeli media.
Mm-hmm.
And during the interview, an Israeli woman in the background interrupted by yelling out, and I can't quote verbatim, how could you treat him in our hospital? Something along the lines that they're terrorists. I believe you guys are doing this. My children are in the army. Obviously, she's hard-lying right, pro-military resolution for Gaza. How large a proportion of Israeli society does Dr. Abulaish think this woman represents? Keep in mind the results of the recent election.
Peter, I'll put that to the doctor. Let's listen to a piece of tape from that setting as Dr. Abayesh was in the Israeli hospital where there was still some medical treatment going on. BBC others with their interview going on, several Israeli civilians began shouting angrily at him. Here's an excerpt from a BBC report.
The man told Dr. Abayesh he should get back to Gaza and condemn Hamas. The doctor replied, he's always condemned Hamas. Dr. Abayesh asked him to sit and talk. The man refused.
This is the problem. Still, this is painful to me. They don't looking always from one side. We had to look and listen to each other. I am upset that he doesn't want to open his mind.
Dr. Abayesh has at least one daughter still receiving treatment there, and anger from Israeli civilians who were in that Israeli hospital. So what about Peter's question to really how much difference does it make to the reception?
Really, this happened. Her name is Livana. It was in the media conference.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking and explaining what happened. Even I was upset with the media. Let her speak. Express herself. And the second day, one of the Israeli journalists approached me and asked me about her. What do you feel? I asked her and told her, as a Palestinian, I am ready to meet with that lady. And I am ready to listen to her. But I have the right to speak and to listen to me. And she was invited to come. I listened to her, and she listened to me. And that's what do we need, to open our eyes. The other issue, always look at the full part of the glass. Many Israelis, friends, colleagues, people whom I know and don't know, who came to the hospital and showed passion and support and made a difference. And I think it made a real difference in the Israeli public. But hope this change is not transient or emotional. We need to continue and to build on this change. Just this morning, before coming here, I was in T-Mobile store.
Cell phone store.
I entered.
Mm-hmm.
A lady is sitting there. She's looking. What does she want? She said to me, "Welcome, Dr. Abayesh." In Arabic, "My name is Samira." I thought that she is Palestinian, whatever you know. "Who are you?" "I am an Israeli Jew. Iraqi Israeli Jew who speaks Arabic, Hebrew."
And recognized you.
And recognized me. Then the Consul General of Israel, he is coming. And this is where we had to move from. A humanity brings all of us together. And to discover that aspect in each of us.
Gadi Taub, in Israel, we want to believe that never more than when we're looking at a story like this. But I wonder how you hear this. We've seen an Israeli election since Dr. Abayesh's daughter's deaths and conservative government come to power. Do you see him as quixotic?
No, but I think that so long as you have a government in power on the other side who explicitly calls for not just the annihilation of Israel as a state, but also the killing of every Jew as a Jew, then it is a sorry state that Dr. Abayesh's opinion is such a minority's opinion. And like you, I'm glad to hear that it's a religious opinion, because we have been the hostages of religious fanatics and fundamentalists for so long in this conflict that it's heartwarming to hear a religious humane message.
But then if that's your view, are you then with the woman who we heard described shouting at the doctor in the hospital, saying, "Go back and talk to Hamas." Is that the bottom line?
I don't know what I said gave you.
You point back to Hamas and their stance, which I understand. It's an honest question. I simply mean, do you think his work for peace is most effective then among Israelis, or are you suggesting he turn it back to the Palestinian community?
I think it's effective to the extent that it is on both sides. But, the thing is that we should look at all these tragedies, and it's almost impossible at looking at this immense personal pain to try and contextualize this. Israelis, too, have lost many thousands of sons and daughters and have also reached for peace. And the Israeli public in general feels that the Israeli peace initiatives were rejected one after the other. And Hamas was a unique trauma for Israelis because Israelis pulled out of Gaza. That is not just even without getting peace in return. So when rockets came from Gaza, Israelis were astonished. It's hard to see from the Israeli point of view how to deal with a government that, even after a pullout, refuses to recognize your existence. So I know that these are very hard things to say in the face of such personal tragedy, but this woman that we've heard, and this was probably a BBC piece,
yes,
because it's typical of the BBC to take the extreme right as representative of Israel.
I don't think it was presented as representative, but I did see the video footage, and it was quite notable. You could not miss it. It was a very notable piece of the events that day.
I'm sure. And it's always, it stands out when people are so vulgar. And this is, to my mind, a disgusting gesture in every respect, and such sharp contrast to Dr. Aboulaish's noble stance. But you need to remember also that the great majority of Israelis have supported consistently the partition of the land between two peoples. And this used to be, I used to be on the leftist minority supporting a two-state solution, but now we're the majority. And we're the majority not because we have become less Zionists, but because we are Zionists. Zionism is based on the belief that all peoples, as our Declaration of Independence says, have the right to self-determination. And so for Zionist reasons, people have begun to see that if we don't go for partition, then there would be no Jewish state and no Palestinian state. There would be a Bosnia with permanent war, because there are so many intense emotions and regrettably so many religious fanatics on both sides.
Garitav, let me turn this coin around. Dr. Aboulaish, what about, we've heard something about the range of response from Israelis to your personal, family, tragedy. What about the range of response from Palestinians? Have they said to you, how can you lose three daughters and still stand for peace? Or have they said to you, bless you, this is a noble position, we support you in this even after your loss? Describe that response for us.
Yeah. First of all, really, I would like to thank my friend, neighbor, colleague who gave his reaction. But what he spoke about, what is going on in the field, this is an outcome. Rockets, pulling out, Hamas, Fatah. These are outcomes and symptoms of what is going on. This outcome is a result of a long-term process. We had to go backwards and to look to the roots of the problem. The other issue that we had to deal with the Palestinian people in one side, in Gaza Strip and the West Bank, and an Israeli people in Israel. Mm-hmm. I can't divide them to say someone in Tel Aviv, different from the ones who are in Haifa, or in Beersheba. This, what do we need? And we had to open our eyes on that. Go deep. These rockets that I am against sending. But why? Have we asked to open? Why is it there? These are symptoms. We are dealing with a patient. If some patient is coming to you, telling you, I have headache. I am not focusing on the place where the pain is, in his finger. I am dealing with him as a human being, as one unity, as one person. And when we deal with the Palestinian case, we deal with the Palestinian people, with the whole case, not to be divided, rockets, this, that. It's symptom and side result. This is one thing.
Yes.
The other question concerning the Palestinian people, some, they are proud of what I am doing.
Some.
All of them, even after this tragedy. When I came back from the Sheba Medical Center to Gaza. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of Palestinians were waiting to welcome me at Erez checkpoint. And even they said it. What I have done because I believe in it, equals what others are doing by military ways, even more effective, because I fully believe words are more effective than bullets, and military ways proved its failure. Not now, years ago. And that's why we had to find another way.
Have representatives from Hamas come to you since this family tragedy?
I can say to you, they came even at the beginning. I was busy. Then they said, we want to consolate Dr. Abul-Aish.
And
they came.
And after the consoling, to say, yes, we join you in peace, or here's another reason to fight, what message?
No, they came to consolate, and I express what I believe in, yes. And they appreciate what I am doing. And that's what I had. I had to fight for the values that I believe in.
Hiyam is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hiyam, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Tom. Dr. Yes. Abul-Aish, I'm so sorry about the loss of your wife and your three beautiful daughters. But I'd like to remind people out there that today is April 15th, and it's tax money. And $3 billion from the American taxpayers is going to fund the Israeli military. And to have the same tragedy repeated over and over again and again. And this is, would be an answer for the caller who called earlier, and he said, what should we do to prevent such a tragedy? Our tax money is the answer, not to fund the Israeli military. And thank you so much.
Yam, thank you for your call. Let's get another right here from Larchmont, New York. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to second what you just said. We have our empathy, of course, for your losses, but with the election of a new Israeli government that seems all the more racist and eager to wipe out anybody in Palestine, and hearing the same old stuff from the media as the previous caller about ignoring the checkpoints and the stolen land and the settlements and so forth, there seems to be little hope.
But what about the doctor's call for peace, for reconciliation? Do you respect that?
Certainly that government doesn't hear it, and our government seems deaf to anything except what Israel supports.
Doctor, what do you say to these two callers?
Lily, I think, and I count on the new administration in the States, but we need actions, really, if they want to take care of the Israelis, that the care for the Palestinian people is not less than the care for the Israelis. And to bring them together, this money, which is going to be invested in military weapons, which proved its failure, love and cooperation and equality and respect is more stronger and can sustain longer than military ways. So the new administration, I think, all of the people everywhere in this world, especially Palestinians and Israelis, are waiting for a new intervention and bringing hope for the people there to witness actions on reality among them.
You had 8 children. You lost 3. That means you still have 5. When they see you with this mission for reconciliation for peace, I'm sure the trauma has been unbelievable, but do they respond to what you're saying out in the world now publicly? Do they support you, or do they say, Dad, Father, do they have other feelings? How do they look at your mission for peace after the loss of their sisters?
2 of my daughters who are living, they used to be involved in Creativity for Peace Camp. The one who is injured and the second who is studying architect engineering. The others, I am teaching them to see others as a human, as equal. The Israeli soldier is not representing the Israeli public. And also what is going on in Gaza is not representing the Palestinians in general. The Palestinians are human beings with aspirations, with dreams, with hopes, with the humanity, similar to the Israelis. And that's what are my children doing and what I teach them.
Do you feel hope or hopeless?
Of course. As I said, I will never lose hope. And always I work for something positive, because as I said, the patient is still alive and nothing impossible. Only one thing which is impossible, to return my daughters back.
That is impossible.
That's impossible. But other thing is possible.
For the five that remain, for everyone who remains. Dr. Izzeldin Abdul-Aish, joining us today in our studio here in Boston. Sorry again for your loss. Thank you for your mission, and thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you so much.
And Gadi Taub in Tel Aviv, Israel, writer, essayist, historian. His forthcoming book is The Settlers and the Struggle for the Meaning of Zionism. Gadi, thank you very much for joining us today as well.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Dr. Abulesh, for your message of peace.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gelrose, and Ping Huang, Alina Mata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.